Welcome back to Shattering Myths. My pleasure to welcome back Scott to the program. Most of you who are listening, long-term listeners, know Scott produced the Shattering Myths program for some time. He's going to introduce the story that has made headlines around the world about Donald Sterling and his moronic comments. And we also have Aaron with us. Aaron currently produces the program and joined us last week when we talked about sports in the news. Both guys are going to soon have their own sports talk show called View from the Couch. And so let's begin. Scott, why don't you tell us what caused the uproar over the weekend?
Okay. Back on the 25th of April, a transcript was released by a V. Sterling that it had the Clippers owner, Donald Sterling, or V. Siviano, that had a Donald Sterling, who is the owner of the Clippers, on it. Making some...
Before you go on, this woman that is has released this tape, is she an ethnic individual? Is she Caucasian? Is she Hispanic? Is she African American?
I believe that she is mixed. I believe she is a mixed race woman. She is a minority.
She is Hispanic and African American, right?
That's correct.
That's the answer to the question is she is Hispanic and African American, and she is in her 20s, and Donald Sterling is 80, correct?
Yeah, he's old.
Okay. All right. Now, by the way, Donald Sterling is married. He's not divorced. He's married. And it's is it not also true that this woman who turned over this tape is being sued by Donald Sterling's current wife for embezzlement?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. All right. So now we have this tape. By the way, can I ask you another question before we talk about what's on the tape? Are you aware of whether or not it's legal in America to tape record, to record in any way a conversation that you're having with someone without their permission?
It is illegal.
Correct. Okay.
Which is why, you know, even now that I'm in the sales part, if I'm going to record a call, I have to let them know that I am recording this call.
Correct. So. Yes. That's why when you call on a customer service issue, they will always say this, your call may be recorded for, you know, evaluation of customer service policies, that sort of thing. They have to tell you that they're recording it if they're going to record it. Otherwise, it is a crime to do what she did. All right. So now that we kind of know the players, what's the content of this?
Well,
call?
The tape comes out and again, he's the owner of the NBA team, the Los Angeles Clippers. And it starts out, the tape starts out with her saying, "I don't understand. I don't see your views. I wasn't raised the way you were raised." He responds, "Well, then, if you don't feel, don't come to my games. Don't bring black people and don't come." She responds with, "Do you know that you have a whole team that's black that plays for you?" And he responds, you just do I know. I support them and give them food and clothes and cars and houses. Who gives it to them? Does someone else give it to them? Do I know that I have? Who makes the game? Do I make the game or do they make the game? Is there 30 owners that created the league?" And then it continues on. And she goes, "Honey, if it makes you happy, I'll remove all the black people from my Instagram." "You said that before. You said I understand." And she responds, "I did. I did remove the people that were independently on my Instagram that are black."
Okay, can I interrupt you here? There's two things that are, because we can't go through this whole thing because it's way too long. But there are two things that when you listen to this that come through. And Aaron, I want your evaluation as to whether or not this is true. When he is talking, it sounds like he is disoriented, that he is a really unhappy man in his 80s. Who some time ago lost his ability to focus on what's being said or to even approximate a rational conversation. Is that what comes through. That's certainly what came through to me.
Yeah, what I took away was kind of a confused old man vibe where he had somewhat of a handle of what he was talking about, but not entirely, and she was guiding the conversation to what she wanted him to ultimately say, especially with those last comments with the honey if it makes you happy.
Right.
She talks about how she said, or he asked her to remove, she says, the pictures of all the black people, and he may not have known exactly what's going on. He may have said, there's four or five pictures on here that I'd rather have you take down, and she is saying, oh, I said that I would take them all down. Isn't that what you wanted?
Yeah, the picture the pictures that she's referring to is that she used her fame by dating this old codger to have access to celebrity. And one of the celebrities she had access to is Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson, you know, the hero of the Lakers, the star of Showtime basketball, you know, extraordinarily popular individual and now part owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And so she has a picture of her hugging Magic Johnson. If you look at the picture, I think it's really inappropriate there, the way she's grabbing hold of Magic Johnson. And so he was bothered by that. Now, the tape comes across that he was bothered by it strictly because he's black. But the fact is, you know, the Clippers are competing for attention in Los Angeles against the Lakers. He is Mr. Laker. Clippers players are booed at Dodger Stadium. He now is the face of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And so there may be some of that in there that irritated him. But nonetheless, his words still are inexcusable.
When it goes on, she says he says he didn't remove everyone, and she goes, I didn't remove Matt Kemp and Magic Johnson, but I thought, and he asks why. I thought that Matt Kemp was mixed and he was okay, just like me. And he goes, okay. And she goes, he's lighter and whiter than me. And he goes, okay. And she's like, I met his mother. And Donald Sterling goes, you think I'm a racist? And she stops him and she goes, I don't think you're a racist. And
yeah.
He goes, yes, you do. Yes, you do. And then she says, I think you, and then he goes, an evil heart.
She says, no, I don't think you're a racist. She's clearly baiting him. That's the terminology we'd use in this kind of a situation. It doesn't excuse the fact that what he said is moronic, stupid, inexcusable, disgusting, but she is clearly baiting him, correct?
Definitely.
Correct. I'd also like to add that she was uploading all these pictures through Instagram. Her Instagram is actually private. You had to have approval to view anything that she was posting until a day or two ago, and now, you know, she's in the spotlight, so she made it.
Oh, yeah. Are you guys aware that that when Donald Sterling's current wife brought litigation against her for $1.8 million worth of embezzlement, and what she's saying is this woman is taking advantage of a man that cannot think clearly, and that he has lavished gifts on her because she's able to manipulate him, is the basis of the suit, which sounds like the conversation to me. And that she told both Sterling and the current wife that she would get even. She would make certain that they paid for that. And then we have this tape released.
Yeah, that all adds up fairly nicely.
Yeah.
At the same time, with that said, she has a history, but Sterling also has a pretty horrible history as far as racial problems go.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the three, because we've had two actually thrown in our face all weekend long. Let's talk about both of them. What was the first?
The first was the slumlord accusations.
Okay. Not a slumlord accusation, actually. Yeah, it's an accusation that and he's a real estate developer, that's what he does, that the apartment building that he built in Koreatown did not have as many African Americans and Hispanics as would you would think, all things being equal, based upon the population of Los Angeles, that you would expect to be in an apartment building. That was the case that Los Angeles sought to bring against him. Okay? So I would ask you a question. If you are a racist, why would you build apartments in Koreatown?
You wouldn't.
Okay, now let me ask you another question. This case was brought to him, brought against him about 7 or 8 years ago. How many 70-year-old billionaires do you know who would spend their days in the office of one of hundreds of apartment complexes that he owns, deciding who should and should not be allowed in?
He would at least hire that out, you would think.
None. Zero.
None. So he himself didn't influence the who got to live there in terms of him making a decision.
However, now, with that said, he mm-hmm. could set, being that he does control policies and stuff, he could set certain policies to make it
okay.
to where...
So let's think about that for a moment. Are you aware of the friction between the Korean American community in Los Angeles and the African American community in Los Angeles?
I am not aware.
Not a whole lot. I know that during the race riots, there was some bad blood as well.
Yeah, it's spilled over as bad blood. What happened is that a disproportionate number of robberies of Korean stores, and the Koreans have lots of stores in Los Angeles that serve, you know, all ethnic groups, and have, you know, fine relationships with all ethnic groups as part of their customers, but they're disproportionately robbed by blacks who are armed. And so the Korean store owners decided the best way to deal with this was to arm themselves. And so when they were robbed, they had a tendency to shoot the would-be robbers. And it created really tremendous animosity between the Koreans and the African Americans in Los Angeles. There's a lot of prejudice now between the two groups, and that's the basis of it. Now, if you were building an apartment in Koreatown, and most of these buildings, the way the apartments work is that the manager of the apartment is the one who decides, you know, who's going to rent a unit. If there's a limited number of supply, more demand than there is supply. If there's not enough demand, anybody that wants to rent one gets one. But if there's more demand than there is supply, it's usually someone who has been given a discount on a unit and is paid a smaller amount of compensation based upon the discount that actually becomes the manager. Wouldn't you think in Koreatown that manager would have been Korean?
Probably. I would assume.
Would they have brought perhaps their own prejudice into this?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
We'll return with the other case of prejudice against Donald Sterling when Shatteringness continues. Welcome back to Shatteringness. We're speaking about the uproar over Donald Sterling. So that you know, we are all in agreement here that what Donald Sterling said is inexcusable. That he is a idiot. No one is making an excuse for Donald Sterling. But I think that when we jumped and isolate a conversation, and we take it out of context, we do ourselves a tremendous disservice. And I'm appalled that every article I read made it sounds like he has a history of this kind of behavior. And these two incidences, his apartment building in Koreatown and one other that we're going to go to in a moment, are always mentioned as proof that he has a history of acting like a racist. And yet you don't build apartments in areas that have a high percentage of minority groups, which he did in Koreatown, if you are a racist. And by the way, you don't buy a basketball team. If you're a racist, you'd buy a hockey team. Now, let's go to the second. What's the second source of proof that he's a racist?
The Elgin Baylor lawsuit after he was fired as the general manager of the Clippers.
Okay. Elgin Baylor, is he a white dude or a black dude?
He is a black gentleman, yes.
Yeah. By the way, he was a great basketball player. And Elgin Baylor is a really nice guy, too. Everything I've read about Elgin Baylor, a great guy. He played on the basketball teams along with Will Chamberlain and Jerry West, the Lakers teams. So when he hired Elgin Baylor, was it common to have an African-American be the general manager for a basketball team?
Not at all.
All right. So that's a pretty good sign that the guy's not just universally a racist. At least he's not acting like a racist. He might be one, but he's not acting like one. And he was fired, and so Elgin Baylor brought a case and that he was racially discriminated against, which is the reason he was fired. And that's what they're all saying is, see, that's proof that he's a racist. Are you guys aware of the disposition of that case?
I know a little bit of the details. I know that I know a few details, but I don't know everything.
Okay, jury went to trial. Jury of 12 people. They took about 45 minutes to deliberate after the trial. Was it a hung jury or was he convicted, A, which is what the media is making it sound like of being a racist, or B, was there a hung trial where 11 of the 12 jurors said, oh, man, this is pretty racist what this guy did, or was he completely exonerated and had all 12 jurors decide against Elgin Baylor?
I believe they all decided against, they said that Baylor was wrong.
Yep, 12 and 12. You know what they said? They said it's a miracle that this man kept Elgin Baylor as his general manager this long, considering the horrible job he did as the general manager of the Clippers. He was fired because he failed.
I want to know where they found 12 Clipper fans at that time.
That was the jury. That's what they decided. So to quote that as proof that he acted as a racist when the jury found that there was no evidence that he acted as a racist, that's really not smart, particularly since he was amongst the first to hire an African-American to head his basketball team and stuck with him, even when he failed to produce a winning team.
Yeah, he stuck with him for quite a while, at least probably 7 years, something like that.
Yeah. By the way, is the girlfriend that that is... done this damage to him. She's a woman that's half Mexican and half African-American, isn't she?
Yes.
If you're a racist, is your girlfriend if you're a racist against blacks and Hispanics, would you be dating a woman who is half black and half Hispanic?
Nope.
Not unless you're out of your mind, right?
I would say no, but at the same time, slave owners had, you know.
Since there's no owning her, would you lavish $1.8 million worth of gifts on a woman that was black and Hispanic under those circumstances?
I don't think I'd lavish $1.8 million of gifts on anybody, no matter the color.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, I'm married. I don't know how much jewelry I bought my wife over the years, but you know, investing on beautiful things to make your wife happy is I've actually found is a pretty wise thing to do. I'm certainly it doesn't total that much. But so what we have so far is that actions say not a racist, words say is a racist. What should speak more loudly? We'll be back when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're discussing the case of Donald Sterling. Guys, I seem to recall that at least once, and I think it's twice, that Donald Sterling was given an award, was specifically recognized by the NAACP for his contribution to African Americans. Is that the kind of thing in terms of actions that you would expect of a racist?
Depends on what it was for. I mean, did they say what it was for exactly?
I think it's, I don't know if it's 2005, 2006, he received the NAACP's recognition for lifetime achievement in supporting causes endorsed by the NAACP, which would be, you know, it's the national advancement of colored people. So he would be doing things that advance the interest of people of color, particularly of African Americans, to be a recipient of a lifetime award.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, if it was something, if he just cut a check to somebody at some point and they were recognizing him for that, I wouldn't
Yeah, lifetime achievement is more than just cutting a check. But it, right. I'm sure there's a contribution. You know, if you want to be noted for your lifetime contribution to the Roman Catholic Church, write them a $10 million check and see how they respond. That's it's true how organizations often respond. But would that be your charity if your actions were speaking louder than words and you were just a despised people of color?
Well, on the surface, I would say no, but I would have to know more before just saying black and white yes or no.
He won a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2005. He's set to receive another. He was set to receive another one, like a week from now, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in 2008, he won the NAACP President's Award.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you a question. What color is the skin of the man who is the current coach of the Los Angeles Clippers?
It's Doc Rivers. He's a black gentleman.
Yeah, in fact, he's not just a black gentleman. He is one of the classiest, most genuinely wonderful people in sports.
He's also their GM right now.
Yeah, he is. But Doc Rivers is so he's both GM and coach. And didn't the Clippers have to give up draft picks to get him?
I believe so.
Yeah, they traded with the Celtics to get him.
Yeah. And Doc Rivers is an extraordinary guy. I don't think there's. I've never heard anyone who has had anything negative to say about Doc Rivers and guys like Blake Griffin, who's one of the stars of the Clippers, a white guy on the Clippers. I think only two white players on the Clippers. He said, you know, just every time that Doc Rivers speaks, he says, I feel like I'm a student learning something.
Yeah, Blake Griffin's a mix as well. I think I think his mom is African American.
Okay.
If you can find somebody that has a legitimate thing to say negative about Doc Rivers, you would find somebody that's very rare.
So here's a guy that's had two general managers, both of who are black, who has a black coach, owns a team that's 80-plus percent African American, received lifetime achievement awards from the AACP, builds apartments in African American and Hispanic communities, dates a woman that is African and Hispanic in terms of her ethnicity. Hard to say his actions are racist when his words are deplorable.
There's no excuse for his words, but the old quote is actions speak louder than words.
But they're not in this case. Everyone who speaks is calling for the man's head, and the reporting is unbelievably jaundiced. I mean, it's the reporting uses things that ought to have exonerated him as proof that he has a history of being a racist.
That's because they can just say he was accused of this and stop there. They don't tell the entire story.
Yeah, but since the case was adjudicated, why not tell the rest
of
the story?
But if I say he was accused of this, I'm not wrong.
Yeah, in the cases that with the apartments in Koreatown, he agreed to pay a fine that was a couple of million bucks. And you might say, okay, well, that's proof that he was acknowledging that he was guilty. No. Most settlements are settled because if you're being sued by a public entity, they bleed you to death. I mean, they're spending money that you're paying them against you, and there is just no way to prevail. And so a good lawyer will say, if you have a chance to settle this as opposed to going to trial, they will bleed you dry. The cost of defending this against a public entity in court is so egregious that almost every business settles rather than having to go to trial against a public entity. And also, if you hire somebody to do work for you and that person behaves improperly, the business owner is responsible for the improper behavior of employees. So, yes, he did settle. It should not be an indication of guilt.
No, it shouldn't. A lot of people settle things for things that they have a lot more control over.
Now, you proposed a theory during the break, Scott, that I thought was really interesting. She's buttering up to and hugging, almost in an inappropriate way, Magic Johnson. And she has illegally released a tape incriminating the owner of the Clippers. What was your implication there?
Oh, again, it's all speculation. And Magic Johnson and the people that he bought the Dodgers with, they've wanted to buy a NBA team for quite some time.
The Guggenheims.
The Guggenheims, yes. They wanted to buy an NBA team. They were trying to buy the Lakers from the Buss family, and the Buss family told them, "We're not selling."
Correct.
Well, now the dialogue throughout the country is that Sterling should be forced to sell.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers, or the Clippers. And
yep.
if you want to buy a team,
cheap.
And you're definitely going to want them in L.A.
Force the sale.
What's the easiest way to make a team available than having Donald Sterling be Donald Sterling on tape?
No, I don't. Yes.
That's my theory. And I don't like that, because now... Wojnowski from Yahoo came out with an easy remedy for this is to sell the Clippers to Magic Johnson.
Yeah, of course.
Well, if that
jump right to it. Yeah, jump right to it. Then just connect the dots, and you can see that there is great likelihood that your scenario is true.
That's my thinking on this, is that there's a lot more connection between Stiviano and Magic Johnson than just that picture.
Yeah, she actually claims that Magic Johnson is her friend.
Well,
and it may well be that Magic Johnson was the person that introduced her to Sterling. So we don't know that.
That's all speculation, though.
That is all speculation. She claims on the tape that they were buds. So you always follow the money if you want to know cause and effect. Still doesn't excuse the fact that he is a man that is out of his mind. He has long since lost the ability to think, to communicate. And I've got to tell you that as I listen to him, although his thought process is much more deteriorated than my father's ever was. You know, my father was a racist. And the kinds of thoughts that he shared would be very similar to the thoughts that my father would have communicated. You know, my father and I got into a major disagreement that just had me say, you know, I don't want to be associated with you anymore. And I haven't talked to my father. I think he's still alive, but I haven't talked to him in over a decade. And, you know, I had to work, my way out of that being brought up a racist. And I'm certain my father was brought up a racist and he stayed a racist his whole life. And I had to work. I mean, and in other words, reasons to fall back into the trap. You know, when I was attending school at USC, I was mugged three times, all by African Americans, one with a knife, two with a gun. And so you're saying, oh boy, you know, maybe he was right. And yet, you know, I fought through it because I rejected everything my father stood for. And I ended up having many of my best and favored relationships being with people of different ethnicities, and found it to be one of the greatest joys of forming friendships with people who come from different communities and cultures.
As well, which is the right thing to do. And, you know, again, good call by you for doing the right thing.
Well, it wasn't necessarily a good call. It's just that I rejected what he stood for, but it was work. I mean, I had to expose myself and do the opposite of what I had been brought up into doing. It's just that, and you know, I was fortunate maybe that all the people that I met of various ethnicities were just wonderful. I mean, you know, I had a business where I was constantly in Taiwan and in Hong Kong and in China, and wow, the quality of the relationships were just astounding. And in my businesses, I would go out of my way if two equally qualified people applied for the job. I went back in the time where I still had some say as to who was hired. You get a business, they grow beyond, 100 people and you don't have any say in who's hired. But during this day when they were small and I could influence hiring, two equally qualified people applied for the job and one person came from a minority, I always gave them the job. I just realized that they would add something to our culture, that they had to overachieve to be in that position. And I just found that 100% of the time, it turned out to be the right call, that we were enriched by their contributions.
And like I said in the break, if you just completely disregard entire segments of people because of their skin color or where they were born or things of that nature, you're going to miss out on just
so long as you don't go the one next step, which is we have this tendency to say, or their religion, or their politics. When you move to ideologies like religion and politics, we ought to be discerning.
Well, they're
discriminating as it relates to what is the nature of a religion. Where if you're right, if you're blind to skin color, you are always better served. But if you look at the way people are responding, rather than being blind to skin color, the people that are railing against him are elevating the importance of skin color. I think we just should be blind to it. So the question is, should Donald Sterling have his team taken away? Should he be forced to sell because of his racist comments? What do you guys think?
I think you can't force them to sell it. They can't do that. There's no precedent in the NBA for them to do that. But what they can do is the other 29 owners can vote to restrict his revenue sharing or make it so he has to pay more in, things like that. And then I would take that money and that you would be getting, and rather than dispersing it among the 29 other teams, put it into the promotion of the game of basketball in minority communities and elsewhere.
Okay. What do you think, Gary?
I don't like the precedent of punishing him for, what he did is morally wrong, but it's not illegal. It wasn't really related to the team at all. And if you do this, what you're saying is now if any of the owners do something that we don't like, we're going to start taking away their revenue sharing.
Yes, beyond just owners, people in general.
Right.
So it becomes a de facto crime punishable by public opinion. To say something that outside the lines of political correctness.
Yes, and I think that setting that precedent would do way more damage to the league than he's done.
Yeah, we have Glenn on the line. And by the way, I would agree with you. If I were the NBA, I would have nothing to do with him. He's tarnishing the brand. But I think when you then punish somebody in this circumstance, you do set a precedent which could backfire, depriving people of their freedoms of expression. You can, even when you're expressing something that's stupid. Hello, Glenn. I'm not saying that you're expressing something that's stupid, but what's your take?
The day is young. Give me a chance.
That's fine.
Okay, so this is coming from someone who doesn't give a rat's back about professional sports, who doesn't see character development for youth in it or anything like that.
Okay.
The guy doesn't see, like Scott said, actions speak louder than words. The man got these awards. He's a shrewd investor. He invested in apartment complexes that would easily be filled,
Right.
So I don't see the racism. What I see is a semi-senile old codger who's an adulterer and a classist, not a racist. His objection about her, number one, he's just plain jealous because she's going after the younger guy and hang out with the younger guy. Number two, he's just a classist because the players are the talent, You're with me. Don't be hot-nodding with the talent. It's that simple.
Right. Yeah, I think there is a lot of classist there. This idea that who's making the funds available, who made the league, who's the beneficiary, and who is the one that is providing this. All that, and I think, by the way, a classist view is a horrible view. It's a view that alienates people, and it's undeserved. When you have a business, I've owned a number of businesses, and you differentiate yourself as the owner from the people who work within the business, you create a dysfunctional enterprise. The best thing you can say about this guy, he's just a grumpy old man that I think hates himself, hates people in general, is just really sad.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, and people of his generation would have tended to be, you know, a little more racist than people of our generation, you know.
Right.
I mean, I was definitely raised to be colorblind, you know.
Yes.
You know, and
I'm colorblind as it relates to skin tone. I'm not blind, though, as it relates to observing. You know, for example, if I see a woman, it doesn't matter what skin color she has, but in religious garb, I want nothing to do with her. I will, right. If she's on one side of the street, just to be distanced from her, I'll walk to the other side of the street. I think that somebody who submits themselves to religious indoctrination is foolish. I want nothing to do with them. If somebody is a politician and advocating politics rather than encountering them and rebuffing them, I'm going to walk the other way. I want nothing to do with them. I don't care if their skin color is red, white, or blue. It doesn't matter.
Right. Well, so this topic is still somewhat uncomfortable. But you keep saying ethnicity when you clearly mean race. So even just talking about race or racism is still a bit uncomfortable. But now in my generation, like we were raised as Christian with red or yellow, black or white, they are precious, and it's like Jesus loves little children of the world. You know, in the suburbs, you know, but raised not to be racist, you know.
Yeah.
I eventually had, you know, black friends, and by the time I got to college and that sort of thing, you know. There's a bit of a double standard on racism these days, because definitely whites are definitely expected to be colorblind.
Yes, but you know what's interesting, though, Glenn, is that there is, when polls are taken in terms of racist viewpoints, there's a much more deeply held and wider example of racism of African Americans towards whites than there is the other way around. And so racism isn't a one-sided thing of Caucasians against people of color. It's also amongst people of color. We'll be back.